You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, a podcast presentation of Black Barrel Media and Ritual Productions. This is an episode-by-episode look at the award-winning TV show Friday Night Lights, created by Peter Berg. I'm Stacey Oristano. I played Mindy Collette Riggins.
And I'm Derek Phillips, and I played Billy Riggins.
The assumption is that you, our listeners, have already watched the show.
But if you haven't already, go watch Friday Night Lights, which is currently streaming on Netflix and Peacock TV, because there will be spoilers on our podcast.
And if you would like to support the show, subscribe for free to our YouTube channel, where you can access exclusive content. We have a YouTube handle that makes it easy to find us. That's youtube.com/@ClearEyesFullHearts. Also, we are continuing to release new episodes every other week.
That's right. So join us as we recap all your favorite episodes and chat with amazing guests.
And answer your questions. Email us anything you want to know at clearasfullheartspod@gmail.com. Today, season 4, episode 7, In the Bag. It was written by Ron Fitzgerald and directed by Stephen Kay. Here's our NBC synopsis. Coach Taylor suspects Vince has brought a gun to school. Tammy unwinds at Wes Dillon faculty party, and Julie and Landry each try to put the past behind them.
There's a lot to unpack in this episode, but before we get into it, we're going to answer some of your fan questions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, our first question comes from David Nelson, who asks, what was Blue Deckard like? Would love to see him on the podcast.
Ugh, he's the worst.
I plan on getting Blue Deckard on this podcast. I want to get him on in a couple episodes, actually. But yeah, Blue Deckard, he's a character. He's very zen-like. He's like a yoga guy. If I remember correctly, he was a vegetarian.
Oh, yes, meditation, vegan.
Yeah, vegan or vegetarian. But it always kind of struck me as like the antithesis of what you would imagine, because that's not at all who Mac McGill is.
Yeah, Blue's very zen and very zen. Funny.
Yeah, very funny dude. Did you know Blue was like the face of, what were they? You guys had like some Texas ice cream pops. I can't remember what they were called.
Bluebell?
But there was like a coach on the cover. Yeah, it was a Bluebell like ice cream pop back in the day.
There's
a football coach on the cover of the Bluebell ice cream box.
That was Blue?
That was Blue Deckard. So like all your life, there was probably Bluebell popsicles in your fridge and you were sitting there pulling them out.
Blue's face.
And Blue's face was on there. And if I'm not mistaken, he's still the face of Bluebell ice cream pops.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy.
We'll Google it and post it at some point.
Yeah, especially when we get him on here. Okay, our next question comes from John in Dallas. What up, Dallas? He says, you've mentioned several times about staying at the Hyatt off and on as a guest star. Did series regulars and the crew also stay there, or were they in apartments or houses? What was it like staying there with each other?
So, yeah, I mean, we stayed at the Hyatt most of the time, not all the time. I mean, there were times where we stayed at other hotels. It all depended. I feel like productions always get a deal with whatever hotel they're working in.
Yeah, it was the Omni and the Hyatt.
Yeah, but right now I'm in Hawaii. I'm on NCIS Hawaii. And everyone that I'm working with on NCIS Hawaii that's a guest star is staying in this hotel. And it's the same thing that would kind of happen on Friday Night Lights. 90% of the time we were at the Hyatt. And so all the guest stars on that episode are staying at the Hyatt. Series regulars usually got paid a housing stipend. And so you would take that housing stipend and either go rent a place, Some actors on the show loved Austin so much that they bought a place. Kyle Chandler, by the time the fourth season rolled around, had moved his whole entire family to Austin and bought a home outside of Austin.
It was also right when that housing boom was happening and they bought at exactly the right time. I'm so jealous. They got good deals. But yeah, corporate housing is where a lot of people stayed, especially at the beginning. It's just furnished apartments and they have those. And you were staying 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, by the third season, they put me on contract for the show. So I was guaranteed to be in 11 of 13 episodes, which meant that I was going to be in Austin for 4 months straight. So at that point, rather than put you up in a hotel, they say, hey, we're going to give you, I think it was like $2,500 a month to basically get your own housing in Austin. And I found some really killer places for like 3 years straight.
That one was amazing. The loft one.
Yeah, there was a guy that was like recently divorced and he had this great house. And he was like, I just need to get out of here for a couple months. So I got a great deal on this place. It had a jacuzzi and like it was a 3-bedroom loft apartment. Really cool place. But yeah, I mean, I got some great deals on stuff. Some of the cast, by the time the fourth season rolled around, had already bought places. Mm-hmm. Kitch bought an apartment, I think the second season of the show. But then there were a lot of series regulars in particular that stayed at, what was the place on South Congress called?
State House.
State House.
A lot of people are State House. I got a housing allowance in season 4. You guys, I love a hotel. It's stupid how much I love a hotel. They like come and clean your room for you. So season 5, they offered me the housing allowance again. And I was like, nope, I'm going to stay in the hotel. And they knew me so well, like season 3 and season 5, that they actually let me keep. I had 2 suitcases that they let me keep at the hotel. And they would like put them away for me. And when I would come, I would have my stuff already there. I knew all the people that worked there. And I had to have emergency surgery season 5.
At the hotel?
Well, yes. Season 5, I was supposed to leave the next day, but I had to go. It was emergency surgery. So Nan Bernstein, when she was on, we talked about this. She gave me another week at the hotel, like they paid for it. And the hotel, when I had come back from surgery, had set up in my room this like gift basket of Sprite and cookies. And they were like, let us know if you need anything. Give me a hotel any day. I love it.
I'm with Stacey. I mean, I love a hotel too, but there does come a point after like the 3rd or 4th week in a hotel where like I've literally been in Hawaii now for 2 weeks. I'm probably going to wind up being here for another 2 weeks. There comes a point where it's like, I want to cook my own meals. I want to be able to. Stacey's over here shaking her head like, no, room service every day. Room service gets expensive every single day. I'm trying to save some money over here. I literally, if you looked around my hotel room right now, there's like clothes hanging in all different places because, you know, after the second week, I'm not paying somebody to come up here and wash my clothes for $40.
Yeah, laundry's the hardest.
So I usually, like when I was down doing Friday Night Lights back in the day, you'd get on an episode and then they'd be like, oh, by the way, we need you for the next episode. And it's like I packed an overnight bag. So I definitely wound up going and Kitch would drive me around because I didn't have a car. And we'd go drive over to Target or something. I'd just go buy underwear for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever.
I did that, yeah.
So yeah, you're wearing basically the same clothes every day of the week. Plus our union makes sure that we stay in nice hotels. That's a plus. I was literally telling a friend of mine, like our union makes sure that if we fly over 1,000 miles, that they have to put us in first class when we fly. Mm-hmm. And that when you stay at a hotel, the hotel has to be a 3-star or above
and
hotel.
And it's door-to-door service. They pick you up and drop you off. It's stupid. We're a little spoiled.
I remember being in my 20s and thinking, this is amazing. Because we didn't have a lot of money growing up. I never stayed in hotels like this as a kid.
Yeah.
If we ever went on a family vacation, we were staying at a Motel 6 or something like that.
Me too. I think maybe that's why I like it. It feels decadent, even like still.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I think I may have mentioned this on the show, but after the 2nd or 3rd season of the show, I wound up basically taking the whole entire color palette of the Hyatt hotel room. And that was my bedroom at home because it felt comfortable. It was like, I love the vibe of that. So I painted all the walls the same color as the Hyatt. So it felt like home when I was home.
Shout out Hyatt Austin.
Anyway, that's a great question. Oh, one other thing too, is that, yeah, because you're all staying in this hotel, every time you leave your room, you wind up bumping into somebody else mm-hmm. who's in the cast. It kind of creates a little camaraderie. There's always going to be somebody at the bar, or somebody in the restaurant eating food, or somebody on the patio.
I don't know anybody. Meet me down at the bar. Yeah. There's also another guest star who I won't name, but in his rider was that he would only stay at the Four Seasons Hotel. And we had to drop him off at the Four Seasons and then drive the rest of us to the Hyatt. Jealous.
But you get to a certain point in your career and there's certain things that you want. And hey,
thank you.
Good on you.
Okay, next.
Our final question comes from Philip, who writes, I was watching NFL football today and noticed how many women are in prominent roles in the game today. Do you agree that we can thank Jess Merriweather, aka Jurnee Smollett, for showing us that women are more than just cheerleaders?
No.
Not entirely, but there is some
No,
I mean, not
it's
entirely.
It's a cool idea.
I do think that there's something really cool about the fact that Journey's character was a football coach. There are female football coaches now. I'm not saying that they're there because of Journey.
I don't know that because I haven't watched the show. I don't know if she's like a coach.
Yeah.
Or like a helping coach.
She winds up being like an assistant coach on the team because she knows so much about football. There are definitely women now that are coaching on the college level.
I know. I love them. There's two in the NFL. They're not like head coaches.
I didn't know that. There are two assistant coaches in the NFL.
Not assistant. One's like a kicker coach and I can't remember what the other one is. I can see her. She has short hair and she's really cute.
But that would make you like an assistant coach. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And then like before Jess, there were still like sideline reporters that were women.
But much more prevalent now. In a lot of college telecasts, the play-by-play person will be a female.
I would say Jess Merriweather was ahead of her time.
Yes, definitely ahead of her time. I don't know that she's responsible for the changes that have happened. But if I remember correctly, there was like a high school linebackers coach when we were shooting Friday Night Lights. And that was kind of the reason that they had kind of created this role for Jess. So it was kind of like art imitating life in some respects. If anything, Friday Night Lights was topical. We'll talk about that a little bit in this episode as we go through it. There's definitely times on the show where they were kind of ripping stuff from headlines, or it was a storyline was influenced by stuff that was going on, whether it be, you know, the Riggins brothers stealing copper wire, which copper wire, for whatever reason, in 2008 or nine was like super, super expensive. And people were literally going into homes and like ripping copper wire out of the walls and copper tubing out of the walls to sell. So those storylines come from real stories. Anyway, let's jump into this episode, Stace. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Right off the bat, this establishing scene in the cold open with Barry Tubb, who plays Luke's father. I just think it's a great little opening scene of them rustling cattle. Is that the proper terminology there, Stace?
Yeah, but it's more like rustling.
Oh, they're rustling cattle. All right. They rush.
Yeah, like an apostrophe.
They rustling cattle out there.
Yeah.
Whatever they're doing. I just wanted to say that Barry Tubb is a legit real life cowboy. And besides playing Wolfman, which I think we talked about in the original Top Gun,
yeah. He
is also in my favorite TV miniseries of all time, Lonesome Dove. So if you haven't ever seen Lonesome Dove, I highly recommend it. Go out, watch that.
I haven't seen Lonesome Dove.
You've never seen Lonesome Dove?
No, I know. And I feel like the worst Texan in the world. I know I need to.
Dude, Stacey,
I think I started to read the book once and then I didn't. I'm terrible.
It is spectacular. Two of the best performances I've ever seen in my life. Amazing performances by Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall. Maybe the best performance of his career, Robert Duvall. And that's saying a lot because I'm not joking around when I say that you have to see it. Robert Duvall literally said at one point in time that he was like, let the British have Hamlet. I got to play Augustus McRae. So that's saying something. If Robert Duvall feels that way about that performance. Anyway, that has nothing to do with Friday Night Lights. Let's keep moving.
Well, tangentially.
Yes.
Bear Tub or 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. I mean, just like to say it's Glenn. Glenn is back and I think I missed him. Glenn, the guidance counselor.
As we've mentioned before, and we've had him on the show because he's a producer on this show, Glenn is played by Steve Walters. And yeah, welcome back, Glenn. I like having Glenn back.
Welcome back, Glenn.
I enjoy Steve in this part. I really do.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I thought maybe because there's so many times that people who seem to work at Dillon High leave and it, like maybe they get fired or something. So I thought he went the way of like one of the teachers, Austin or whatever, but he's back. Yeah, it makes me happy. Oh God, Becky's dad. I forgot about Becky's dad. I found it weird, but also nice that Becky's mom is going to let him stay in the guest room.
Yeah.
It feels awkward.
I'm sure it will be awkward. And as we see in this episode, it will get awkward. Lee Stringer is the actor who plays Becky's father, and he does a great job in his time on the show. I find it interesting that he's a truck driver, though, because when I was originally cast to play Billy, there was a giant semi on set one of the days that we were shooting. And originally, that was supposed to be my semi truck. I was also very happy to learn shortly thereafter that they scratched the idea of Billy becoming a trucker, because that would have meant that I would have been out of town a lot, just like Becky's dad is out of town a lot. And that would have meant that I would have been a lot less episodes.
Yes, I would think Transpo was also happy about that because it meant you didn't get behind the wheel of a semi and break that truck to pieces.
Speaking of Blue Deckert, that question that we got earlier, Blue Deckert and Brad Leland have known each other for years. When Brad Leland first introduced me to Blue Deckert, Blue said, oh, you're playing Billy Riggins. You're the guy who dies in that truck accident in the 4th episode.
Shut up.
And I said, what? And he goes, yeah, man, your character like drives off a cliff drunk in the 4th episode. And I was like, oh, I didn't get to that episode yet.
Shut up.
And I was just mortified at this point in time. And then they both started laughing and they were like, we're just kidding, man. And I've never forgiven Blue for that.
Oh my God.
In reference to your previous question, I think that was David Nelson who asked us earlier about Blue Deckard. So yeah, there's another Blue Deckard story.
That's hysterical. I'm stealing that.
Wasn't hysterical at the time.
It's pretty funny. I'm going to try to calm down about this, but I need everyone who lives outside of Texas to understand how important Whataburger is to us. I live, breathe, and die by a Whataburger being the best burger in America. And I know everybody has their thing, but you can like, you can take your In-N-Out, you can take your Fat Burger, you can take your Burgerville, and you can shove it. It's all about Whataburger. I can taste the ketchup in my mouth right now.
Me too.
I'm like salivating.
I miss the hell out of Whataburger. Now, I mean, Whataburgers, we're talking about fast food burgers here. Like, as far as fast food burgers go, I'm going to have to agree with Stacey that I think a Whataburger is better than anything on the planet as far as fast food is concerned.
The fries are perfect.
The fries are great. Plus, they have a great breakfast menu, too.
Yeah, they do.
You can go in there and get breakfast tacos that are, oh, they're money.
It's also really, really good late night drunk food. 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
It's the best.
We may or may not have had a couple of cabs drive us through Whataburger at 2 o'clock in the morning.
The best.
Stace, my two things that I miss probably the most about Texas, like as far as food is concerned, like fast food wise, it's Whataburger and Taco Cabana, because you can't find Taco Cabana.
Oh, Taco Cabana. You guys, if you go in, it's fast food, but if you go inside a Taco Cabana, you can get a margarita. The best.
I'm not kidding when I say that in college, I basically lived off Whataburger and queso and tortillas from Taco Cabana. But I will also say that nowadays, my body can't really handle Taco Cabana the way that it used to.
I haven't been in forever. Derek it's and I have so a friend good. Named Emerson. He's actually my best friend. And anytime I would pick him up to come into Texas, the very first thing we had to do before he would even go home is have to drive through Taco Cabana.
That's crazy. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. Every time I go down to Texas, I always get Whataburger and I always get Taco Cabana. And then my stomach disagrees
I'm
with
desperate
me.
For fries with fancy ketchup. I'm desperate. Okay, but also in that scene, it's you meet Tim going through the drive-thru. First of all, I want the listeners to know, I don't think you ever get to see her, but the girl who was playing the girl at the window was very, very cute. And Derek and Taylor both knew how cute she was.
Were we talking to? Oh,
they
God.
Were both very flirty.
I don't remember
and it
this.
Was hysterical. She was very sweet and very, 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 very cute.
Were we flirty in character?
No, no, no.
Oh.
No, this was in between takes.
That's not good.
Yeah, no, it was great. She was very cute. And she like played along. It was very fun. Okay, I need to talk about that truck. I know like you love that truck and the Riggins brothers love that truck, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about that truck. Taylor, I may have talked about this before, but maybe not. I always had to ride in the middle. And Taylor was like, because it's a stick shift, Stacey, I need you to sit exactly like this. So like one leg was on your side and then the other leg was on Taylor's. And he's like, it's the only way that the shift works. So I was like, fine. It's not the only way the shift worked. He did that because every time he would downshift, he would jam it so hard into my knee and he thought it was hysterical and it never stopped every single time.
I think it's pretty funny.
Also, I had never touched it before, but for some reason during one of those takes when I was having contractions, I threw my hands up on the ceiling of the truck. And you know when like an old material just crumbles into a bajillion pieces and it fell over all of us? It was disgusting.
Yeah, that truck was gross. It was also hard to drive that truck. I mean, getting it in gear was a pain in the butt.
Uh-huh. And into my knee.
I remember when Stephen Kay was directing this episode, because at one point he was setting up that shot across the street from the Whataburger, and it just happened to be one of those Texas days where the sky kind of goes on forever, and both of us were just looking at it, and I remember him saying, like, you can't get this shot in a place like California. Obviously, mm-hmm. You can't get the shot in a place like California, because I don't think there's Whataburger. There may be one or two Whataburgers in California, actually. I think they moved one out there some time, a
serious?
Long time ago. I think maybe. Or maybe I'm getting it confused. I know they moved In-N-Outs to Texas.
There is an In-N-Out in Texas, yeah.
Yeah. I think there's an In-N-Out in Waco right by Baylor. But anyway, it's reason 458 why shooting in Texas was so important to the authenticity of the show. I mean, that shot in and of itself is just, you can't replicate that.
Moving on. I love that Jess is a little smarty pants. I think maybe we didn't know that before. And I think now Landry's going to super crush.
Yes, I think that this is definitely going to change his opinion of her. He already had the hots for her, but this is just going to put him over the edge.
She's beautiful. She knows football.
She's smart and she's sassy as hell.
Smart. Oh, she's sassy.
She's super sassy.
Love her.
I love her too.
Love. Okay, who would have called the police and told the police that Vince had a gun on campus? I was thinking about like who doesn't like this guy. And then I thought to myself, if it turns out to be JD, I'm literally going to throw my remote at my TV.
I really do wish at some point in time that Vince would beat the crap out of JD.
Does he not?
No, unfortunately. Unfortunately. Spoiler alert, doesn't happen.
But I guess we don't know who called.
I don't know who called. And to be honest with you, I couldn't remember at the start of this episode if it was somebody calling it in or if it was actually
real.
Like, did he have a gun?
I had no idea.
And when they went and searched his locker and it wasn't there, I was like, oh, so somebody's pranking him or somebody's trying to get him in trouble and he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, that's when I thought, like, the only person that probably hates him is JD. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got secret enemies too. I don't know.
Who knows?
I do not remember shooting that scene in the hospital at all.
Really?
I remember nothing.
I do, because basically Billy not having insurance and health insurance in general was very topical at the time. Unfortunately, it still is.
Still.
But this episode aired about 3 months before the Affordable Care Act was passed. And the topic of universal healthcare and the uninsured was literally like on the top of the news cycle, like every single day. And Billy's lack of insurance is what leads him to building the chop shop and ultimately leads to Tim's incarceration. Thanks, Obama.
That makes sense that you would do that. I didn't remember, well, because I've never seen it and whatever, but I didn't remember this scene with you and the doctor.
Yeah.
After. This is all new to me.
Well, I remember it because it was like,
it's important.
It sets everything in motion at this point in time for Billy. Like, Billy's got to get money. Billy needs money. How's he going to get money? And then, you know,
I didn't know that was because of me.
It's all because of you. You're the reason Tim goes to prison.
Oh my God, don't say that.
Yeah, it's your fault.
That's terrible.
It's true.
Oh my God, I'm going to get so much hate mail now.
Meanwhile, we find out that Becky's dad has knocked up a random woman in Seattle, so he's going to be spread pretty thin financially and physically as he tries to tend to the needs of his two families at once. You know, Dylan has an uncanny knack of breeding just amazing fathers and father figures.
Dude, yours? Mine.
Yeah.
Vince's.
Not spectacular.
Matt's dad.
Yeah.
What's in the water at Dylan?
The parental units in Dylan in general are kind of crappy. Joe McCoy.
Oh God, Joe McCoy.
Yeah. Like the only decent fathers are like Barry Tubbs. All right. He's a little, you know, demanding of his kid and stuff.
I mean, he's telling his kid not to go to school, but.
Coach.
And Coach Taylor. And Landry's dad.
Landry's dad's a good dude. I would say Street's dad is a good dude.
Yeah.
Although he did try to sue Coach.
God, FNL has some daddy issues.
Yes, FNL definitely has
daddy issues. Don't find out. I kind of love that Matt's mom and Grandma Saracen have this, they've made like their own little family unit now, and I find them adorable.
I do too, but this scene kind of breaks my heart for Julie because we find out that like Matt has been calling home and that he's talked to Grandma Saracen and that he's talked to his mom, but he hasn't called Julie. And I'm sitting here just going, hey, Matt! Pick up a phone. It's your problem, man. Call Julie.
But maybe it's too hard.
I know, but still. It breaks my heart for Julie.
Yeah, she breaks my heart this whole episode. Okay, you don't have any money, so you then go to my place of business to look at other women while I'm in the hospital. It's cool.
Okay, number one, you're not in the hospital anymore. You're at home with your mom. The story tells us that.
Oh, did it say that?
Yeah, sit at home and shut up, Stacy. I'm trying to figure out how to pay for you and our unborn child and boobs. Help me think.
Oh, shut up.
Kitch and I, meanwhile, love talking about Kit Kat any opportunity that we can get. I think we named him Kit Kat. I can't remember if we named him that or if
I was
the show
just
did.
About to ask you why Kit Kat. It's a perfect name for a bull.
Kit Kat, by the way, is the longhorn steer that we bought at auction at the end of season 3.
Yeah.
The writers must have wanted to kill us because I feel like anytime we had a moment to, Kitch and I would improv something about Kit Kat and it always got cut. But in this particular scene, they kept it. So that was nice.
But no, there's no selling of Kit Kat.
Not a chance.
No.
Well, I'd let my child die before I would sell Kit Kat. I think that's what Billy's getting at. Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a better solution. Like, Mindy can keel over and die, but we're not selling Kit Kat.
Again, about saying about how, like, there are things said about me that I didn't know. The girl that plays my friend in the strip club, she does come back and we do have like a friend, but I didn't know we were friends since we were 17. I'm finding that out now.
You should read the scripts next time you do something.
Listen, the last job, they wouldn't let me read the scripts. I only got my scenes. It's a little show out now called Kaleidoscope on Netflix, guys. Check it out.
Oh, nice.
I have no idea what happens on that show either.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, really.
But see, Stacey, Billy goes to the strip club and finds solutions to his problems. Let that be a lesson to all the kids at home. You know, if you're ever in a pinch, trying to figure out what to do with life,
go to the strip club.
Go to your local strip club. It always helps me think clearly. I'm kidding.
Can't fight you. I know I can't fight you on that, though.
It always clears my head.
Oh, God. Okay, I do need our listeners to know, while they were doing this whole karaoke celebration thing, Steve Walters, again, who plays Glenn, has an amazing voice. You could kind of tell when he did his song, but he was also playing around and being funny, but like legit has a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah, no, Steve's a good singer.
We should make him do it on the podcast.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Also, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. I knew it was happening. And I still, like, my stomach turned over. Ew, he tried to kiss her.
Yeah, he tries to kiss Tammy. And it's really funny to me because Glenn went from being like this kind of lovable, awkward guidance counselor to arguably the most hated man on Friday Night Lights since Joe McCoy. Glenn, what are you thinking? Why are you trying to kiss Tammy? I remember when Steve got this. And he was like, dude.
Yeah.
He's like, they're going to want me to kiss Tammy.
I have to kiss Connie Britton.
He was mortified by it. Not because, I mean, like, look, hey, kissing Connie Britton.
I would like to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue. Connie literally told me when she said, if Billy was the last character in Dylan, I think that there would be no children left, basically.
That makes me feel that I had a child with you.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. But anyway, like, Steve was just nervous about the fact that he was going to have to kiss Tammy, not Connie so much as kiss Tammy, because of how fans were going to react to it. Like, he was like afraid he was going to get hate mail.
I get that. But in the end, he's so lovable. And you can see right away, even like while he's doing it, that he knows he messed up.
Yes. Yeah.
That's just Steve. I would like to say Coach Taylor again, a molder of men, him with Vince.
Yeah, the scene with him and Vince is amazing. I think that because Vince hasn't really had a father figure, Coach is somewhat taking over that role. And Vince is, of course, like, who are you? What do you want from me?
What do you want?
If I wasn't a good football player, you wouldn't care. And we know as an audience that even when Coach's players get injured, and, you know, we saw what he did with Smash and what he did with Street when Street no longer had any value to the team of Dylan, he was still there for Street. And same thing with Smash, and same thing with Tim Riggins.
Yeah, Vince doesn't know that yet.
Vince doesn't know that about Coach yet. But yeah, Coach is literally saying to him, look, man, any way that I can help you, I will. I'm here for you. I'm here to help you out and take care of you and be, you know, a role model for you. It's pretty amazing that he's gone and done that for Vince. And yeah, you're right. He is. He's a molder of men.
And it was Tammy saying, if you trust him, he'll trust you.
Yeah.
And then like exactly. That goes on.
Once again, Tammy's always right.
She was also right about not kissing Glenn. Steve is so good at like stumbly, awkward, just mess. It's so sincere and so like real. Him saying, I basically mouth raped you. And I think like he really thought that.
This is literally my favorite scene with Steve in it. He's going to hate me singing his praises, but he really is amazing in this role as Glenn. I got to see a production of him in the Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winning play Proof years ago.
I didn't know he did Proof. I love Proof.
He was fantastic. I think the character's name is Hal.
That's the perfect role for him. Perfect.
Yeah, and Steve just hit it out of the park. It's one of those things where the actor and the role are kind of perfect for each other.
My favorite Steve was Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet. He was perfection.
I could see him doing that really well, too.
I loved it.
He just nails the scene. It's awkward. It's funny, but it's also heartfelt. And I love the two of them together in the scene. He and Connie both do a great job. Kudos to Steve. Don't let him know that I said that.
Yeah, tell our producer, Miranda, don't let Steve listen to this edit. Just tell him not to. I need it known that I am a queen. Well, I should say I was. I can't burn a CD anymore. I'm a queen of a mix CD. Derek, even you, I could make you the perfect mix CD and there would be no Broadway tunes on it. You would love it because I will tailor it for the person. I can make a perfect Derek Phillips mix CD.
All right. I'm very interested in this now.
I might just have to make a playlist for you.
Yeah, just make a playlist for
like
me.
A
you don't
Spotify
have to
playlist.
Burn a CD, but yeah, this is going to show my age. Like, I didn't even do mixed CDs back then. I was doing mixtapes still.
I never did a mixtape.
It was still a
That's
tape.
That's so much work. Like, you're legit an editor when you do a mixtape. Yeah.
But I had a mixtape. I would pop in whenever I had ladies over when I was in college.
Just one? Or like, were there different...
One mixtape with all kinds of sexy music
just
on
it. It starts to get repetitive after a while. You need to mix it up.
Oh, this wasn't repetitive. It was sexy
it
music,
was
but then it like... There was like Nine Inch Nails on there too.
Okay.
But hopefully
okay.
at that point you were in the thralls of passion, Stacey, as it were.
Moving on!
Oh, I don't want to move on. How are we moving on from my mixtape?
He said there was a passion and I wanted to
dry Stacey's dry heaving over here.
It's so good.
Can
careful.
We get her some water? Oh,
I just,
boy.
Amy Teagarden. Remember?
That's a terrible segue. That's your segue?
I can't segue out of it.
All right.
I just, the blood is rushing to my brain. How much Julie used to like be that annoying kind of just whatever 14, 15 year old. And she's just this young, I hate that term, but like a fully fledged young woman with all these things that she's dealing with. Amy Teagarden breaks my heart. And I just want to hug Julie so badly. I'm so in love with her.
Stacey, I am right there with you. This whole entire scene with Amy is just, the whole entire situation with Matt in general is killing me. And her character has literally come full circle in the last 4 years. And there's like this part of me, I want to be like a father figure to her and like protect her from this. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want your child to have to go through something like that.
And she was like, I thought he was the one. And I just want to be like, I mean, we did too, but also you're 16 and that doesn't happen. So shut up.
Yeah, but it also, I mean, it feels that way. Like, God, you remember like breakups at that age?
It's literally the end of the world.
Yeah, breakups suck anytime. But now, like at 16, oh, there's nothing worse.
And I do love that Jess looked at her and she was like, we got you, girl. Go back there. I got you. I'm going to cover you. It was just very sweet. Thank you a lot. Speaking of breakups. So I guess Tyra and Landry were going to meet at a middle spot between them. And Tyra just didn't show up. And now won't answer the phone. What's going on with my sister?
This is one of those theatrical conventions. Like, Adrian Palicki is literally working on another show at this point in time. You know what I mean? She doesn't even know that this storyline was probably written, and it kind of paints Tyra in a bad light in some respects. That being said, there's closure here, I guess, for Landry. And I think that this means Landry can officially move on now. And if he needs my help, I'm happy to assist him with a mixtape.
Okay, sure. Oh, you know what? I'd put a Landry Clark mixtape up against yours, though.
That's true.
These would be pretty good.
Yeah, I bet. He knows music better than I do.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Derek and I have a very good friend named Barbara Bowman who was with us on set. And during that baby shower, she was literally sitting right next to me, like helping me open presents. And I don't know if we caught a glimpse of her. Also, I was there that entire day and I'm on screen for a second. And I just remember sitting there with this giant pregnant belly on for hours while you like go off and do really bad, scary things.
I felt terrible because Barbara was on set with us the whole entire day. As we said, I've known Barbara since I was in college. She's one of my best friends on the planet. And I was hoping that she would make it into the shot. And I think all you can see is like her knee at one point.
She's with me in the stands when we shot, I think, State or something.
Okay.
She makes it.
Okay, good, good, good. Actually, that probably in season 5, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, she came to the Cotton Bowl when we were shooting. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad Babs made it in there. Good stuff.
Yeah, you're making bad deals.
Bad decisions. But once again, in an effort to save you, so as we said before, you're the reason Tim goes to prison.
I remember that day. I didn't know he was the one that brought you the idea, but I remember on set, we were joking around and I was like, what do you do with my husband? What do you do? What are you getting him into? I legitimately didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I kind of forgot that Calvin is the one who came up with the chop shop idea.
Yeah, because he's in high school.
Yeah. But I think we've shown enough that Calvin is a little bit shady. But once again, just for all of you at home, Stacey is the reason that Tim went to prison, not Billy.
Oh my God.
Moving on to what is next
for the
here,
entire
Stacey.
Podcast.
Yes. Stacey is the reason Tim went to prison.
I hate you, but I love Tank.
I do too.
I think he's great. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's a good dude coming out there, helping out Luke and his dad build that fence. None of the other players made it, but Tinker does. I like what they've done with his character. I mean, they've kind of created this character that literally, like, at the start of the season, he was just, I mean, he started out as an extra on the show, and then they started writing some stuff for him. It's really cool.
So fun. How
is it that
is
the players from East Dillon came to my baby shower, but not the players from Dillon? How did this happen?
I mean, I don't think that there's any real connection with Dillon anymore, to be honest with you. Like, what connection would there be?
Well, you went there. I don't know. It's just so weird because we used to have them over to the house and they were drinking out of solo cups. And now East Dillon is somehow at my baby shower for some reason. It's all very weird.
But Tim is there. That's the connection.
Yeah, because he's the help. Oh, and you were with the players on the field. So there's that.
Yeah.
Okay. Literally just hit me.
Stacey just loves trying to blow holes into this show. No, she just loves to find anything that seems inconsistent and illogical and just blow it up. Just blow it all up.
I just want to make you squirm, Derek. That's what I want to do.
You did. You did make me squirm. I had to think there for a second. I don't like thinking. Not when I'm not in a strip club. I don't like thinking.
No, that's where your good thinking happens. I also get in a little bit of a fight and a tiff with this man next season, seeing Tim wrestle with him in the mud, which I didn't know happens. Yeah. Looked to me like maybe he was getting out some of his own daddy issues on Becky's daddy.
100%. Maybe? Oh, yeah, 100%. But you know what? I don't have a problem with it.
No, I didn't either.
I kind of loved Tim just beating the snot out of him. You know, it was good. Like, this is for every father in Dillon that doesn't take
care
of
their kids. For a minute, I couldn't tell what guy was on top, so I couldn't tell who was pummeling. And then we saw the, like, Riggins hair flip. And I was like, oh, it is? It is? Oh, yeah. Okay. I like this.
And Tim's a badass, and I'm glad that they finally let him, you know, win a fight. Because I feel like a lot of the times Tim winds up losing fights. And I'm like, can he win a fight finally?
Yeah, true. Because he seems like he could fight.
Yeah.
He could hold his own.
I would think.
Take that, Becky's dad.
I just had a great idea, Stace.
And you're not even at a strip club.
I know. Believe it or not. This is craziness. This is a business idea for Tim and I. Like, Tim and Billy could start a little, you know, private business. They could just be hired guns going around Dillon beating the crap out of deadbeat dads.
I mean, there's enough of a business in Dillon for that to happen.
Yeah. And we know that there's mass transit, so we can just get to and fro real quickly using the subway, the Dillon subway.
It's like hiring a hitman, but you just go and you just like punch him in the face and then leave.
Yeah.
I don't hate this idea.
Some guy's cheating on his wife. He's out to dinner and we just walk in and just punch him in the neck.
Uh-oh. But after a while, all the men would be like, oh, it's the Riggins brothers. Somebody's getting hit.
Brothers
around. Somebody's getting hit.
Somebody's getting punched in the neck. Let's go. All right.
Because I haven't seen it. This last shot, Tim picks up the dog and then he goes to let him out and sees this land that's for sale. And just to him looking at it, saying how beautiful it is. And I got a little like goosebumpy because like a little bit of foreshadowing there.
Yeah, some foreshadowing. I got goosebumpy and it hit me in the feels because it just reminds me of that final shot in the fifth season.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, I did not remember that they established that land this early on. Obviously, we didn't know while it was happening that that's how the show was going to end.
I bet they did.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I also love that Tim, this shows another side of Tim too, that he goes and picks up this dog from the pound, Skeeter. You know, because we know that Becky kind of fell in love with this dog. And then her mom was like, I just can't have the dog in my house, blah, 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 blah. And we know that this is her dad just trying to buy her love, basically. And Tim goes and gets the dog. Unfortunately, I don't know that we ever really see Skeeter again. I think maybe we do for a couple episodes, but he's definitely gone by the fifth
season. Maybe once in the trailer.
Yeah.
Skeeter doesn't come to our house.
No, Skeeter's long gone at that point in time.
Okay, that's it for this one. Episode 7.
But join us next time. We're going to go tackle season 4, episode 8, entitled Toilet Bowl. But until then, clear eyes.
Full hearts. Can't lose. Clear Eyes, Full Hearts is a podcast presentation of Black Barrel Media and Ritual Productions.
Executive producers are Stacey Oristano and Derek Phillips, Chris and Mindy Wimmer for Black Barrel Media, and Steve Walters for Ritual Productions.
Our producer is Miranda Parham.
Send your questions to ClearEyesFullHeartsPod@gmail.com.
And follow us on social media. I'm on Instagram at Stacey Oristano.
And I'm also on Instagram at _Derek Phillips.
Check us out on YouTube and BlackBarrelMedia.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.